Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Connecting Faith today. I'm Neil Stavem, along with Ted Ross, and today we're going to talk about business as a mission. In fact, it's a strategy whose time has come. You know, all around the world, there are Christian business people and entrepreneurs that are building kingdom strategic business ventures.
Wow.
And we're going to find out and meet one of those dynamic guys today who for, well, three decades almost has been doing business as mission in China.
Oh, that's so awesome. You know, it's a good reminder that spreading God's word around the world is not just for pastors or missionaries. It's for people in commerce, you know, yeah, getting out there and actually making a difference for Christ in the world.
So we'll hear about it. A great story. We've talked to Dwight Nordstrom before and have an opportunity to connect with him again today. He comes back to the States about once a year, and we'll hear his story and just get caught up on how, you know, businesses in China are being used as a platform to start Bible studies and build churches. So
that's fantastic. And I look forward to hearing that conversation. Now, I do want to celebrate, though, too, Neil, right now. We've already been a week on the air in North Dakota. We're expanding our ministry. God's blessed us in that way.
That is a wonderful opportunity. So congratulations to you. If you've just discovered Faith 89.1 in Bismarck, we're glad to have you listening in the Bismarck Mandan area. We do have a welcome packet for you. Want to just find out more about Faith Radio? You go to myfaithradio.com and you can request your free welcome packet. And of course, you'll find out the full schedule about what happens every day here in Faith Radio. So we're just honored to have you with us today, and thank you again for tuning in.
Go to myfaithradio.com. You'll find the welcome packet link right there at myfaithradio.com.
Today in Connecting Faith, we're welcoming back a friend who we've had opportunity to get to know over the years and is carrying on a unique and wonderful mission. In fact, using business as mission. Dwight Nordstrom has over 30 years experience doing business in China, and he's been chairman of PRI. It's a U.S. manufacturing holding company with 20-plus equity investments in China. But he has a heart for ministry, and actually is we're going to find out about that. Using the outreach of setting up businesses and operating businesses to reach the nation of China with the gospel. Dwight, good to see you again.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We need to know a little bit more about, we hear the term maybe occasionally, business as mission. I don't know, does that really describe what you're doing? Do you accept, is that
I
a
do.
Good term?
I do. I think BAM, which is the abbreviation for it, is one of the most robust ways in which people who have never heard of Jesus as a Christ can hear of Jesus. We spend over 50 hours a week typically in our workplace, and we find that working among our fellow employees, our customers, our suppliers, as well as local government people, we're able to communicate the gospel. Most of our operations are 50 to 500 employees. We have had over 20 that we have a minority or complete ownership in, and we typically see 1 to 2 local Bible studies which lead to churches happen every year in each location.
You're targeting cities in China with over 1 million people, right?
One of the amazing things that's happened in China in the last 35 years is 1.5 times the population of the U.S. has moved from the farms to the cities. 450 plus million people. They will move another 250 million people in the next 25 years. And because they want to get from 85% farmland-based, rural-based people to about 25%. And it's been the most amazing migration in the world. Most of our employees, we've had several thousand, are first-generation urbanites who are very open to change, first-generation college graduates, and first-generation capitalists, those that where work is rewarding high performers and punishing poor performers.
Is that a we don't have to talk, I guess, Chinese politics, but is that a workable model to move to 25% agriculture, you know, compared to 85%?
It is. Okay. There's many things that one could be critical of the Chinese Communist Party, which is an authoritarian party, in fact, increasingly so under Xi Jinping, the current party chairman and president. But It is urbanization at 75% is a very obtainable goal for them.
So you actually start businesses, and do you keep the businesses, or do you eventually sort of turn them over to local companies, or are they locally owned anyway?
Well, we have to business's mission. We have to accomplish two goals. Okay. We do want to see local church bodies started through the business. We also, though, must have adequate financial return. Typically, our investments are in the $1 to $10 million range. But we're not private equity in the sense of we normally don't want to exit after just 5 to 7 years. We've had some technology partnerships which are now 15-plus years. Though we have partnered at times with private equity groups, they're great to partner with, and at that point there'll be an exit. What we love to see is even if we have to exit and there is a gain, we're able to apply that gain to new opportunities, and then the people in the current and the location that we exit as an owner, they still stay involved with us. And we've seen several cases where that has stayed for many years, and we like to see that.
Yeah. So you're targeting large – I mean, we think of cities of a million or more, and China has, 200 or more?
200 – over 200. The U.S. has 10, and we look – one of the sad things, but the special heart of God is for those that really are pre-Christian, those that have never had a chance to hear. So let me give one exciting story. And by the way, 100 of those cities are where the population of Christianity is less than 2%. Though the amazing thing and the thing, praise the Lord, is in the last 35 years, China has gone from about 10 million Christians to arguably 100 million. We don't know the exact number. That is an amazing development and definitely the work of the Holy Spirit, as well as Chinese nationals that have committed their lives, as well as foreigners coming in, I think have contributed to that. Recognize, though, 80%+, so one of the challenges for the 100 million Christians is 80%+ of those are first-generation Christians. They do not have models. Secondly, highly restricted in what content or literature can happen. We think less than 5%, probably 3% of those that lead churches in China have had 6 months or more Bible training. So it's unfortunately a very difficult place to grow deep. And so the church has spread wide, but not deep. But in these cities of less than 2%, the normal person in that city will never have a chance to encounter the message of Jesus and a Christian in their lifetime. And that's sort of the tipping point. So we focus on those. Let me give one illustration. We recently acquired a factory of about 140 people in the city of Zhongshan. We're a major supplier to Home Depot and to Lowe's for a product that sold for about $1,000. We are partnering in the States with a technology partner, private equity group. The China side, we're 100%. We just did this June 10th of this year. We did a survey. We got on site, and not one of the factory workers was a Christian. 9 had seen a Bible. Now we have several non-nationals on site now who share our faith. We believe that will tremendously help the quality of that operation, and off hours they'll be exposed to Christian principles and the gospel.
It's almost beyond our ability to comprehend the lack of awareness, I guess. I mean, and I guess the fact that China is this absolutely huge place, that probably makes a difference too, right?
Well, and people hearing this, you're encountering Chinese students who are now in American high schools, they're full-paying students, American universities. Take this opportunity to share with them. They are open as a general rule. They want to improve their life, and I believe the Christian values will help them in this life as well as the world to come.
So is that part of what your goals are in work, that you're not only – I mean, ultimately you want to see churches established, but you want to help people improve their lives and teach them
And we're given excellent wages. Yeah. One of the nice changes that's happened is probably 10, 15 years ago, my American friends would say, well, are you taking jobs away from the U.S.? Yeah. And you could argue that right now China's a mid-range labor rate, so it's not – It's higher cost right now than Mexico in some places. But what's amazing about China for U.S. companies is the market there. So many of our cooperating companies, we're actually selling more product made in the U.S. and then sold to China than that's exported from China to the U.S. And so the two economies have tremendous synergies, complementary nature of the and the largest trading relationship in the world for our lifetime. Bilateral relationship.
Talk a little bit about what the Chinese worker maybe understands about, you know, values and
Well, this is one of the toughest things. I focus our industries are medical component parts, aerospace parts, certain specialty chemicals, and some a general industrial electric vehicle. We've had some tremendous success recently in electric vehicle, the carbon fiber chassis. But they come in and their presupposition is to save face. It's okay to lie. When you have a company of 200 people, 50 engineers, you cannot lie and achieve what we call quality sigmas of 5 or sigma 6. And so I think the Judeo-Christian values are essential to achieve high quality. Automation by itself, good sourcing, regimentation is not enough. And so I think I have a competitive advantage because I'm a believer in Jesus and the values are part of my life. In fact, we find our indirect workforce, not so much our direct workforce, our production line workers, but our engineers, our accountants, our HR people, normally they will experience sort of a crisis of belief in, okay, I've been told not to lie, but I lie because I save face, but how do I get the power now to actually do this, to not backstab people? Let's talk about, you know, covet. You know, the last of the Ten Commandments, do not covet. Well, in practical terms, that means rejoice when the high performer gets rewarded better. And poor performers are, you know, in essence, not rewarded. But in a socialist system, that drags everybody down and the person that excels is limited. Well, companies will not be successful in a competitive world market if high performers don't rise to the top.
Does this work in the midst of a fairly strict communist regime? I mean, are they looking for market drivers to, you know, the high performers are going to win?
Yeah. Now, you know, that is a very complex question.
Yeah.
And the larger the company, the larger the industry you're focusing at, if you're going to be focused at a couple $100 million industry, they're going to try and have a local Chinese product champion. And there's an unfairness. And frankly, I'm glad the current administration is trying to attack some of the unfair principles in that way. But in industries that are smaller than that, so under $100 million, I find that I love local Chinese competition because we'll beat them on quality. And that in the medical, the aerospace, the telecommunication industries, we consistently win quite well.
Dwight Nordstrom is my guest today. Dwight is chairman of PRI. It's a USA manufacturing holding company with equity investments in China. But more importantly, Dwight is committed to seeing the gospel and God's kingdom advance in China. And they focus on strategically on large cities in doing business as mission. We're going to talk more with Dwight in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. Guest today here on Connecting Faith. We've had an opportunity to check in with Dwight. I guess it's about once a year probably when he comes back to the States, at least this part of the States. And we have the opportunity to talk about his work in China, where you've been for, it's 30 plus years, right?
Yes. And my wonderful wife from Minnesota.
Yeah. Well, did you go to business school and say, I'm going to be a business person? Or did you say, I want to be a missionary and say, maybe I can put the two together?
Everyone's path is different. You can tell I've been in China 30 years, so I'm above 50, approaching 60 here. And at least when I grew up, and China was frankly off the map because it was communist China. Mao Zedong was in power. You couldn't get long-term work visas there. When I was 11, I was called to missions, and that was through missionaries that came to our local church that stayed in our home. And just became what a wonderful thing to go cross-culturally intentionally to share good news. At 19, in my undergraduate school in Fort TCU, over a time period, saw the opportunity for China, but this is the mid-70s. There's still no diplomatic relationship between the U.S. and China, but I got to learn Chinese. Went to Middlebury, and since that time, I've been focused on that the last 30-plus years. Business is one of the major avenues that the gospel can be communicated, particularly in countries that are what we call restricted access, so Islamic countries, ethno-linguistic areas of India, and the unreached cities of China. So I encourage people to be in business is where you spend your time and where people see who you are.
Because it's restricted, some to a greater extent than others, so what does that mean in terms of how you come in, and are you overt or covert about what you're going to do? So.
That's another difficult question that a quick answer would lead to maybe some wrong conclusions. We know how to walk the line. China is very pragmatic. We have invested a lot of funds and a lot of technologies into China. We've never had any one of our 200-plus non-nationals over 30 years ever asked to leave China. That would not be true for many people that maybe do things just as a one-off type of thing. We pay a lot of taxes, and I can give a lot of stories of where we're one of the largest taxpayers in a certain region. We stick by the rules. We encourage even, frankly, how the rules are written at times through our work with the American Chamber of Commerce and the U.S. government and other trade associations. So you walk the line, but you also want to maybe at times push the envelope and see the response of local people. One of the good things is the different economic zones in China, different cities, do compete for quality businesses, and there's much opportunity there.
Give us a sense of, I mean, you're in dozens of cities, and you're targeting to reach, would you say there's 200?
There's 200, and now we've been in over 20 cities. Okay. Right now we're in 8.
Okay.
And we target cities that have less than 2% Christian. And so, for instance, Beijing, we have a couple operations, city of 24 million people, 11 open churches. Now there's many house churches in that area. And we have mostly some manufacturing, engineering centers, a research center, and then also a Christian publishing operation.
Well, you look at, you know, a map of China, and you think, well, there's pretty large population bases, it seems, all along the coast, I guess. Mm-hmm. But then you go inland. Is it a completely different country in many ways further in?
One of the blessings of the U.S. that I think geographic fact, the U.S. is two oceans. And much of our population lives along the two oceans. China only has one ocean. So roughly 800 million people of the 1.4 billion people in China live within 250 miles of the eastern coastline, the Pacific Ocean. As you go, China also has even more than the U.S. areas that are simply not habitable for growing of crops, et cetera. So unless things are brought in, there's a lot of areas in China that are pretty inhospitable from a living standpoint. Though you have, for instance, in the interior of China, the city of Chongqing, 35 million people, one of the least reached cities in the world. And growing, we ship parts to some of the tier one automobile manufacturers there. So growing economically.
I think we just wonder, is this really effective? You know, do you get churches maybe that support you and your family or standing with you say, you know, are you really focusing on the gospel, or is it on turning a profit?
Well, this is the question to ask. First of all, there is always risk that business and earning money can turn into the love of money. We're warned against that. I have no spiritual support, nor does our company, from any nonprofit tax-exempt sources. We don't accept that, and we don't seek that. However, we must have prayer support. It is a spiritual battle. We also have put ourselves under spiritual accountability. Among our non-nationals, we would have over 20 mission agencies that we would have contracts with, not really financially based, but please come visit us once every 6 months. Inspect us. How are our lives? We live in a tough place, and Satan's he doesn't want us to get more penetration there.
Sure. So you hire people, or you take over a business, and then do you just say, you know, there's there's an opportunity to get together and talk about values or Bible study? Or, I mean, do you
have
Bibles?
Yeah, I mean, this recent acquisition just 7 weeks ago of 140 people, we had a design engineer from Purdue University who's also a young Christian, a man from Canada in his 50s who's a passionate Christian. We added them to the workforce. All 140, there was no believers. Only 9 had ever seen a Bible. And we've now, you know, encouraged people to talk, to have study sessions. One of the great things is over 50% of the employees interviewed said, we want to have training, continuous improvement on family and marriage. Well, who is the author of family and marriage? And so we're bringing in some non-nationals who have a good for about 5 days, and they'll be doing it off hours on after work and also on the weekends. This particular factory happens to have a dorm, and so about 80 of our workers live in the dorm, and we're creating some times of singing and sharing.
And is it, you know, I guess it's just training. You said that many are they're open to change. They're well, they're educated, right?
So yeah. I mean, almost without exception, our 20 plus operations historically, the education level of our Chinese worker exceeded the education level of our factory partnership in the U.S. So now, education by itself is not enough. You need experience, and again, these are first generation urbanites, college grads, so they don't have the role models. There's a lot of things that they don't do as well.
So what are some of the questions that get asked? Is it about the values? Say, well, how do I not lie to save face? I mean, is it more cultural issues, or do people really curious to know about Jesus once he gets introduced to the pictures?
It's all over the map. Okay. Love, though, is extremely compelling. When you care, when you see a person as made in the image of God and not just an animal, not just something that's worthless unless I have a relationship. That is extremely compelling to people. So love. I encourage people with international students, they're here. Love. Just let the love of Jesus radiate through your life. But then in terms of operation, these people want to improve their lives. They want to do better economically. They want to perform better because we do reward better those that perform better and don't give raises. We fire people that don't perform as well. And for quality, they have to learn how not to lie, how not to backstab, to live a moral lifestyle good and outside of the workplace. This recent acquisition, I'll say a significant percentage of their revenue was done not in accordance with the value-added tax and related tax regulations. Well, we stopped that immediately, and in the last 6 weeks, I think I've said no 30 times plus. It's been more than my two girls in saying, no, we're not going to do it this way. It's going to cost us actually over $1 million more to do the right thing here, but we're doing the right thing. They're asking the question, why are you doing it? This is hurting your pocketbook.
Opportunity to share the gospel in a powerful way. We're talking today with Dwight Nordstrom. Dwight has been in China for 30-plus years doing business as mission, and he is the chairman of PRI. It's a U.S. manufacturing holding company. They do equity investments throughout China, and we're hearing more of his story, and we'll continue on in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. Dwight Nordstrom, my guest today here on Connecting Faith, talking about business as mission. You mentioned, Dwight, a little bit ago that you had one of your guys in from Canada, a passionate Christian, another young student, I think, from Purdue. So
yep.
Do you recommend, encourage students, professionals to look at business as an opportunity to just go in and build some relationships?
Absolutely. And by the way, in business, one thing we love is we love economies that are growing. And even though the new normal in China, it's going from 8 to 10% growth to probably 5 to 7% growth, China's still going to be growing for the next 25 years. The urbanization, the 250 million people that need to move to the cities from the countryside, that will sustain economic growth. And in this regard, the leadership in China is quite capable, is managing the economy. So I'm not anticipating a long-term deflationary environment like Japan or other things. And so it's a great place from a business to get in about to do that. Lots of new designs going on in the local market. One illustration is we have a technology. We had identified pollution reduction technologies. And over 2.5 years ago, we began a search for something in the electric car vehicle. Now, our first auto parts plant in 1997, China was making only 375,000 vehicles. The U.S. was at 14 million. Well, fast-track that to today, China's making over 25 million vehicles. The U.S. is in still in about the 16, 17 million range. And so China is the world's largest manufacturer and consumer of vehicles, but they're now going to be also the largest in electric vehicles. And one of the limitations of vehicles is range based upon weight of the car. We identified a technology developed out of Cambridge. We licensed it exclusively, and in the last 16 months, we've had 7 customers, over $8 million in engineering contracts, which will lead to others. We're still praying for a great commission model with that. It's done well financially, but we haven't yet seen how we're going to be starting the studies with these customers, because these are mostly large Chinese entities that are having us design this lightweight chassis for an electric vehicle. But it's a great place if you're technology based to go there. If you're HR, we need finance managers. Trust is key. So. All the whole range.
How do you measure success? And is it there has to be a home church developed as a result, or is that one of your factors you're measuring?
Sure. We are in many cities in China. And one thing that I have found is if I demand the exact same result for success from a great commission perspective in each city, the teams really vary. So what gets my juice going is when a local Bible study is started every year. And they grow to 20 people. And then, okay, let's see what happens. They work with the Three Self Church. They work with local house churches. Both are great. I will say city by city, we have different goals. And the local team sort of decides that. Financially, no. Financially, I do, as a chairman level, do have the financial requirements that I would require.
Has it changed in terms of the way that you've done business over the past 30 years?
Oh, unbelievably. Think about it. I mean, it's been 10%, 8 to 10% growth for 25 years. China, you went there 20 years ago because of low cost of labor. Now you go there because of the local market. You go there because of the access to engineers and low cost engineers. Medical, I mean, the amount of Minnesota companies, Wisconsin companies that are shipping medical devices or component parts to China, you know, is tremendous. And so it is a great place. So how that has changed. The city we live in of 24 million has 1 million-plus university students. Half of those are in science-like. And so, you know, when I have an engineering job, I'll get 100 to 200 resumes. Very difficult for a company in the upper Midwest to get.
And have you seen changes, too, just in the way that people respond to the gospel?
Yes, and there's still a turning to the Lord. There is not – outside of materialism, what's your option? You know, Islam is not a viable option at all for Chinese. I mean, it's a negative. So are you going to be a materialist? But wait a second. The world is more than just what we see physically and what our five senses tell us. And people want love. They want sustainability. They have all the problems of emerging society. I mean, diabetes, medical issues, divorce rate is skyrocketing. My first factory as a manager, but not the top manager, my department, the people would have to ask me to approve on a divorce. Now it's epidemic. And unfortunately, the reasons for that, more so than the U.S., are not financial reasons, but are adultery reasons.
Unique challenges that you know believers face in China. I mean, when they come to faith, are they able to sustain their growth as believers?
Like any place in the world, the parable of the sower is reflected in the church in China. I would say there's even more of a problem of the cares of the world overwhelming the people. A key reason for that is a restriction on Christian content, Christian literature, Christian training. So anything that anyone can do to raise up knowledgeable, gospel-passionate, spirit-filled Christians to live and work in China will be beneficial. There's just a lot of falling away because they simply don't know. One illustration, a good friend has a ministry with Right to Life and sort of abortion rescue, and I put that in quotation marks, in a very strict environment within China. When he goes to churches, both house churches and three self churches in China, and ask women of childbearing range who has had an abortion, over 90% throughout the country raise their hands during that time. And secondly, doesn't ask the questions right against each other because it's too emotional, but he then asks how many feel that there's a disconnect between that abortion and your belief as a Christian. Very few have seen the disconnect. Well, what's the problem? There's not a lot of Sunday schools. There's not a lot of Bible training. That we're made in God's image just isn't as strong there. And we need to bless people with that.
Do you feel pressure or desire to say we want to come alongside and work with any sort of ministries or missionaries or, you know, those that are just trying to share the gospel, that we're going to do it our way and not really sort of get involved in like maybe a pro-life movement or those kinds of things?
In business, you got to bring your A game to China. You got to, it is such a competitive, and in ministry, if they just say, I'm going to reproduce what I do here and bring it over there and not contextualize it, it's not going to be successful. And they'll fail more than likely. Okay, so it's got to be contextualized. And you want the local Chinese to lead, and in most cases we come along aside. There are many ministries and many individuals and churches. You've been doing great things, world-class things. Those can be contextualized for China, but they need to be contextualized.
You've seen that over the past 30 years, right? Contextualization is so key, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's one of the beauties of the kingdom of God. I mean, we're going to be a throne not just of ethno-linguistic people groups, but of different centuries, different experiences with technology that are all going to be worshiping our Jesus.
How would we effectively pray for you? I mean, you talked about business needs your A game, but this is a spiritual battle there. So what are ways that we can pray effectively for you?
Thanks.
And
you know,
companies like
this? Certainly. We're back here. This is just about 1 year since my wonderful mother-in-law graduated to heaven, mid-80s, great relationship. Dad's still around, father-in-law, father in love. But just praying for our family. Secondly, that we would get more non-national workers who are committed. Right now, I need an engineering manager at one of my operations who's passionate about the Lord but is a great engineering manager, because I got 8 engineers that need guidance. Then, of course, we're always looking for new technology partnerships, but to bless them as well. Minnesota, Wisconsin companies, upper Midwest have tons of opportunity in China, and you know, maybe our holding company is a good place to look to help them implement in some way sales, engineering, sourcing, or manufacturing in China, for China.
Does it work better sort of from the bottom up, kind of the line level employee, or is it top down? I mean, you get in and...
In general, the indirects, we see a significant double-digit percentage come to Jesus within 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. The production line workers, that varies a lot. When we've seen that happen, we've seen it in clumps or groups of people, and sometimes very early. So it's just too different. I mean, the production line workers typically have 2 years post-high school, and these are normally people, oftentimes female, not exclusively, 23 to 27. The indirects are all across the board, 20, 22 to 40. One thing we're finding is our average age in the workplace is increasing. It used to be under 30, and now it's crept beyond that.
You've been there 30 years. You think, well, who's going to take my spot when I'm ready to kick back with a fishing pole or something, which probably won't be for another 40 years. But let's assume that. What do you think about transitions?
Well,
there's room for more, obviously.
One of the nice things, first of all, I don't think we have our act together there. We have had, after I left GE as their divisional but corporate country manager in the early 90s, I've patterned after what I learned from them to mentor people. So I've typically had 1 to 2 mid-level managers, 25 to 35, that I just groomed for 6 months. There's over 30 of those people that are still leading operations. So I do groom pretty well, but now you're talking about an upper-level grooming. And from a holding company standpoint, the various technologies, not an easy fill. So we're still looking at that. Obviously, I'd like to keep the health. I don't think for me right now, right at 60, retirement, not for ministry. I'd love to go another 15, 20 years, but that's up to the Lord. And also to see how the family goes. I think one thing that we have seen is for our girls who are 9 and 12, unlike my education, which was not in Christian universities and grad school, so 10 plus years, we're seeing that the animosity to evangelical Christians on most campuses here in the U.S. will probably have them, when they move back to the U.S. full-time at undergraduate, probably at a Christian school, and mama's going to want to be here then.
Yeah, that will be different. Yes, that will change. Are you always targeting? I mean,
we'll look at 10 to 15 possibilities to invest in one or two each year. That's our goal. If we go less than that, we're probably not going to be picking the nice winners because we've got to, again, look at unreached cities and the right technologies and businesses to grow. So, yes, we are always looking. And some of those you just have to wait and be patient and sort of grow organically. Others you can find through acquisition type things.
You know, there's been lots of attention, of course, on North Korea and just, relationships with China in general. Does that concern you?
Unfortunately, absolutely. By the way, in 2003, we had a medical stent factory that we were going to put. And North Korea offered us a complete woofie. And with the U.S. government, we approached them and they were like, you can do this. They were going to allow us to have our own workers, our own workplace. We chose not to do it. We actually set the stent factory up, medical stent for coronary heart disease in China. And that's had some real nice, great commission results. Having said that, the situation today is much worse. It is the most dangerous place in the world in terms of a major confrontation that could happen. It is a complex thing. I hope that Trump and China, the North Korea, Kim Il-jong, he's he. Yeah. But if the right pressure is applied by China, and they do have some pressure, I think that a lot could be accomplished if it can be a bilateral negotiation with Trump and China. There is hope, but it is a very dangerous situation and can quickly spiral out of control. It is a black swan event that all of us are worried about. Yeah. So pray.
We need to continue to pray for the church in China that continues to grow. It's wide but not very deep. Pray for Dwight as he leads to see continued success. I mean, truly it is it's a remarkable way in which the gospel is going out. In an area where, I guess, not a typical, what we'd think of as a missionary outreach, but it really is, isn't it? So,
thank you.
Dwight Nordstrom, chairman of PRI. It's a USA manufacturing holding company with the 20-plus equity investments in China. Glad to have him in the studio today. We're going to talk more about business and innovation in the moments ahead here on Connecting Faith and share a portion of an interview with Larry Osborne talking about innovation's dirty little secret. You're listening to Connecting Faith. We've talked business as mission the past few minutes. An important part of business and really any development is innovation. And recently I had a chance to talk with Larry Osborne, pastor of North Coast Church, about innovation's dirty little secret.
There are all kinds of stories in business circles. Survey and marketing groups were shown the fax machine. They were shown microwave ovens. They were shown minivans. And everybody said, well, I don't like that idea. I don't want one of those, until they suddenly showed up and then they had to have it. And so that's once more one of the reasons why you never know when it comes to innovation how people are going to respond. But if it doesn't change the way people act and it doesn't really work, then, well, it's nothing but a great idea.
So is there, I mean, you're not necessarily a fan of innovation by committee, but I know you talk a little bit about research and applying data. Is research valuable?
Well, there's a big difference between research and collaboration, and they get mixed up. And in today's politically correct world of leadership, everybody's for collaboration, which means everybody gets some input, and at the end of the day, whatever you come out with has everybody's fingerprints on it. But if you were to turn that around and say, no, we want all of that counsel and advice and information, but it's not collaboration where everybody gets to have their little piece of the pie or their piece thrown into it, it's research. Then that changes everything. We do lots of research around North Coast, but it's, again, a small circle of 1 to 3 usually that come up with the best ideas. And so at that point, they kind of weigh the different opinions because, you know, all opinions aren't equal. You want to weigh opinions. That's one reason anonymous opinions aren't very valuable. You don't know if this is a chronic complainer, Pollyanna that's always happy, a bright person, more dull, whatever it would be. So at the end of the day, we love research. There's wisdom in the council of many, but that is different than collaboration, which is we all put our little piece together and you end up with something crazy.
Is there value in doing surveys or is it just making sure we're sort of surveying the right people?
I think, frankly, most surveys are not very helpful, especially in church settings because of two reasons. One is if they're anonymous, you can't weigh them. And the second thing is when people put their names on them, they're not honest. You take a survey in any church and start asking people how many tithe, and you're going to get a lot higher percent if their names are on it of what they claim they give, as opposed to what all research shows the average is about 2%. That's not a tithe, that's a tooth. And it's the same with exercise, same with diet. People over-report on the positive side. So at the end of the day, they can have some value, but they are usually way overvalued.
And again, the weighing the response, that's an important principle no matter what field we might be in.
Absolutely. For instance, we have a rule at North Coast Church that anything anonymous is never even read because all it does is confuse us and we get brain debates. So if somebody wrote on a worship response card, which at our church is done at the end of the service, that it was too hot or too cold, if we don't have a name, we can't contact him to find out, well, where were you sitting? Is this somebody who tends to always run hot or cold just physically? So that's not very helpful if I can't weigh it.
One of the things we talk about wisdom of many counselors, you suggest advisors or talk about outside advisors. Clarify the difference between sort of the internal and the external advisor.
Yeah. Well, anybody who's got any leadership skill set at all can solve a lot of problems just themselves, thinking about it, praying about it, mulling on it. Then we kind of move next to my team, which are those closest to me. And then I call it my tribe, the people that we naturally associate with. Let's a church, it might be a denomination or group of like-minded churches. But all of our biggest problems, when they get huge, are almost always solved by outsiders because they see the world differently than we do. And they don't see the limitations. And they just go and do things. We go, you can do that? I didn't know you could do that. And so I'm a big fan of finding advisors that are outside of our natural circles. Got some just fun little stories of that. One quick one is General Mills knew everything every other company was doing in terms of factory turnover from one flake to another flake. And they were spending 4.5 hours in the turnover. But they were also sponsoring a NASCAR team. So their CEO took down their top engineers to spend a week with guys who do in 7 seconds what should take 15 minutes. And they came back and they now turn around the same factory that used to take 4.5 hours in 13 minutes. And it was because they got outside of all the engineers who knew manufacturing and found somebody who knew nothing about their field but knew everything about doing stuff fast. And the same thing can happen in ministry and business settings. Get outside of yourself, outside of your field, and they have answers to things we'd never have thought about.
which is just would be challenging, I guess, to try and think about, well, what field would I want to pursue? I mean, do I want to get NASCAR pit crew? I guess you'd have to really determine what the problem was you're trying to solve, I guess, first, right?
Yeah. But it's more sometimes we limit because we all have natural ones. One I like to show, sometimes people think that only a Christian can teach us something on organization, for instance. But at the end of the day, when my plumbing is broken, I don't care whether a guy's got a fish on his truck. I just want to know he knows how to fix the pipes. I'm not going to turn to a non-Christian for moral values or help me understand scripture. But there are many things, and there's frankly a lot of churches and Christians that, well, if it doesn't come with a fish on it, we don't want anything to do with it. And I always point them to Jethro. Telling Moses how to organize the children of Israel. The guy was a pagan. Well, the night before he acknowledged God, so he has one night's sleep of knowing God, and then he's standing up and he's telling Moses, you're going to burn out if you don't make all of these changes. Who would have guessed that a pagan mindset would have the key to keep Moses from burning out?
Yeah, there might be a sermon there. I don't know. But probably only for six weeks, and they could just be an experiment, I suppose, right?
Yes, that's right. Hardly anybody will stop you from experimenting. But we know all kinds of groups, and Christians aren't unique for it. It's in the business world as well. People are afraid of change. In fact, all kinds of studies have shown over 50% of people, when it comes to adopting change and innovation, won't even be for it until it's successful and they know who else is for it. So by definition, you can't on the front end ever get beyond 50% approval.
Which brings the topic of the importance of a champion, a respected champion. Talk about why that's such a key part of this.
Well, in almost every group, small or large, there are certain people, when they speak up, everybody listens. And when they're... I always ask leaders if I'm consulting with them in the Christian world or even the business world, I say, who on your team or who in your organization, if they say, oh, this is a horrible idea, you know in your gut that it's going to go nowhere. I say, identify them. And also, who if they're a champion, everybody's going to say, well, I don't know, but they're for it. Let's give it a try. And then I say, well, let's get those people aboard. Let's not try to sell everybody. Let's go and see what it takes to get those people aboard to at least allowing us to try it. And I found whenever you have a respected champion, you can try anything because everybody go, well, they're for it. Because people don't really understand new ideas. They always interpret them in light of what they've already experienced. As I said, of early fax machines where, well, why in the world would I want a note that I can hardly read on shiny paper? So they don't see where it's going to go. They compare it to what they've already seen.
So is it always the same person, you know, your board chairman or someone who's just outspoken?
Yeah, in the real world, it tends to ebb and flow, but most organizations have a few people. I mean, candidly, on our board, there's one or two people that if they're, and it's not always a person in the position of, say, chairman or whatever, it's the personal power that they have. And there's one or two people that if they're against an idea, I know ahead of time it's going to go nowhere. That's just the credibility that they have. So it's not that they're manipulative or some bad kind of roadblock. It's that they have a lot of credibility. And so if they have all that credibility, why would I not seek out their wisdom and their input to either get their approval to do it or get them aboard as a fan or at the very least say, yeah, I'll step aside and let you try it.
You're going to expend a lot of energy trying to work against that otherwise, aren't you?
Absolutely. And you can have, I learned this as a young youth pastor. I didn't know the guy before me had been fired for spending all of his time with this little, he called it a band of men, 12 guys, not even girls involved, that he poured his life into in a large church and the rest of the youth group brought it. So I came up with a discipleship program, leadership training, and it just got blown out of the water by the deacon board at this church because they heard it in light of the guy who'd been fired before me. So I talked to a respected champion, as I call them, and found out the history behind it and changed it to VOOMT, stupidest name ever, stood for Vocational Ministry Training Program. And a month later, I not only got approval, I got double the budget I asked for. And it was only because I had a respected champion who helped me figure out how to word it, and bingo. everybody was for it.
Larry Osborne talking about innovation's dirty little secrets. You can hear that full conversation by going to the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.